Every once in a while, there is something that is discussed politically where even two sides who come at it from a different angle on the political spectrum can agree. The NDP have been advocating for Premier Mo to go to China. The NDP have saying, we need to go over there. We need to use the offices that we have there, the trade offices that we have, leverage whoever we can to try and fight for not just Canadian farmers, but of course, specifically those in Saskatchewan that are impacted by the tariffs that have come from China. Well, the premier clearly agrees with this because they have announced that they are going over on this trade mission. If you think back to Friday, we had federal conservative leader Pierre Poilievre join us in studio on the program. And one of the things that I asked him is, you know, we hear lots about all of the tariffs that are happening, but specifically the canola tariffs, many of us in the province feel as though we haven't heard as much as we should from the federal government. I asked Pierre Poilievre, what needs to happen?
First of all, we have to cancel the $1 billion loan that the federal government is giving to BC Ferries to buy ships from China. You know, first of all, these ships should be built in Canada. We should have the ability to build ships, not just for ferries, but we need the shipbuilding capacity in the event that, God forbid, there's a war one day. And yet, the federal Carney government is giving a $1 billion loan to bankroll the acquisition of Chinese-made ships. I mean, at a time when they're attacking our farmers, let's cancel that. I think we run a big trade deficit with the Chinese economy. Let's tariff other things and say that we're going to continue to tariff Chinese goods until they remove all of the tariffs on our agricultural and seafood products.
So we need to be more aggressive.
I think we do. I mean, Beijing is walking all over us. They smell weakness with Mark Carney. He's obviously backing down to Donald Trump. And so Beijing says this is someone who backs down when he's attacked. And that's why they're going after our farmers. And I also think it's crazy that, you know, Mark Carney said nothing about this, like literally nothing, dead silent. He had time to tweet about International Cat Day, but did not say a word about Chinese tariffs on our 40,000 canola producers across the country. I saw after I made that point, he suddenly got on Twitter very quickly and put out a post. But it really speaks to how this government ignores and disrespects the prairie producers and Western Canadians in general.
We haven't yet heard what the support from the federal government will look like. There's been a lot of industry support for automobiles and automakers, for steel and aluminum, for the lumber industry. What is it going to be for agriculture, specifically canola in this case? Yet to be heard. I did ask, because I find it interesting, I'm a person that's saying, why do we put these EV tariffs on anyway? 100% tariff on Chinese electric vehicles. Are we protecting our electric vehicle industry? It's not very robust. Number two, electric vehicle sales are way down in Canada. So what are we trying to protect? I'm saying let's dump the electric vehicle tariffs. Pierre Poilievre sees it a little bit differently.
Well, I think we need to say to the Chinese government that this could get a lot worse, because we buy way more from the Chinese than they buy from us. Mm-hmm. They have a big surplus with us. They prevent our goods from getting into their economy already. And there are national security problems with Chinese EVs. These can be roving surveillance vehicles. They have cameras. They have GPS connections, satellite information, all kinds of data collection that could go right back to Beijing. And we have to be very careful about having a million Canadians driving around in what I describe as potentially roving surveillance vehicles controlled by the regime in Beijing.
You know, at the end of the day, and I had this conversation with a few people in the office after the interview with Pierre Poilievre, what's to say that isn't happening in non-electric vehicles that are coming from China? I mean, we import a lot of regular oil and gas use vehicles. Nothing says that there isn't that same type of problem with those. So nonetheless, you heard from Poilievre. He says don't take the tariffs on electric vehicles, not in those words, but essentially saying we have to be careful and limit the amount of them that are in our country. And so tariffs, a way to do that. While I was chatting with him, I had read some of the work that the Conservative Party of Canada have put into what they call the Canadian Sovereignty Act. And I asked the leader, What's this all about, and what are we expecting to hear in the House about the Canadian Sovereignty Act this fall?
The Sovereignty Act is designed to make our economy strong, self-reliant, and sovereign so we can make our own decisions and run our own lives. So it would legalize pipeline construction by getting rid of C-69, legalize shipping oil off the BC coast. It would speed up approval for LNG plants, mines, and other major projects. It'd get rid of the industrial carbon tax. And this one is fun for your farming friends who are maybe thinking about retiring. It would get rid of the capital gains tax altogether for those who reinvest their proceeds in Canada. So right now you get a lifetime exemption on your capital gain, which is fine. I'd keep that. But anything above that, I would keep that as tax-free as long as the proceeds are reinvested in Canada. You buy Canadian stocks, a Canadian business, maybe open a Canadian restaurant. Then that capital can roll over again and again and again. And this would bring back the $500 billion of investment Liberals have driven to the United States of America. Imagine you could say to companies, look, you sell your investments abroad. We'll let you reinvest them tax-free here in Canada. The factories, the mines, the pipelines, the warehouses that would be built with that capital, this would boom. And it would really put us back in charge of our lives.
That's just a segment of the conversation we had with Pierre Poilievre, who, by the way, won quite handily, as you know, Monday night in that by-election, Battle River Crowfoot in Alberta. So now representing the Alberta riding in the House of Commons in Ottawa, September 15th, they are back in action. And Pierre Poilievre officially back in the House. And we will watch as things unfold, of course. A bit of a new look for the government. Last time we saw Poilievre at work in the House during question period, holding the government accountable, was when Trudeau was at the helm. How does it look different? What's the strategy change yet to be seen? But that will unfold, of course, this fall. Just one of many storylines that we will be following here on the show. Speaking of storylines, I was moaning a little bit this morning about the challenge with Air Canada. Jody and I, over the last couple of days, did just a quick getaway for 3.5-4 days, which saw us taking a flight using Air Canada and coming home Tuesday night. Did not go smoothly. In fact, we ended up having to book with WestJet. We never did cancel our flight, but it ended up being a complete schmoz. And I know already exasperated by going through the process to try and get reimbursement for our flight hasn't gone well so far. We didn't cancel it, which you'll remember we had Gabor Lukacs on the show, who is a air passenger advocate for people that have problems with airlines and want to lodge a complaint. One of the things that he said is don't cancel your flight. They have an obligation to either get you home on a different flight or reimburse you for your losses through that. I'm not holding my breath. I guess the good news is that although there was a temporary stoppage and now a bit of a backlog, they were able to get a deal. The union representing the flight attendants and Air Canada were able to come to a settlement that now will be good until March 31st of 2029. So a 4-year deal lays out a plan to pay flight attendants 50% of their salary as ground pay for an hour before the flight takes off for small planes, 70 minutes for larger planes, and that rate is going to increase to 70% of their pay for the groundwork by the time the contract expires in 2029. So lots of people were very supportive. I, one of them, for the plight of the flight attendants who were saying, look, we're being asked to do a bunch of work that we're not getting paid for. I think it opened the eyes to a lot of people. It will be interesting to see what comes about for WestJet. Their flight attendants contract expires, I believe, January of 2025. So chances are this could be a precedent set for WestJet to replicate what Air Canada just settled, or maybe WestJet would look at this as a springboard to go somewhere else. So will there be air stoppages there with that negotiation when it comes up? Time will tell. We'll continue to follow along there. All right, let's take a break. We'll be right back here on 650 CKOM, 980 CJME. Yesterday on the show, Brent Louts, who was in the chair for me, had a conversation with you about this home invasion that happened, or break and enter. We're not even sure what the what the method was to the break-in that happened in Lindsay, Ontario, just east of Peterborough. 44-year-old man asleep in his apartment, wakes up to an intruder who has broken into his apartment. They get into a fight, an altercation, resulting in the suspect, the guy who broke into the place, sustaining serious life-threatening injuries. And then the homeowner, defending his home, is charged with a serious offense. People are throwing their arms up. This has made ripple effect conversations throughout Canada. We had a great one on the open lines this morning. It was interesting, right at 8:30, we had Charles Adams on our program. We've had Charles on before. He was a police officer in the States. He was a judge. He's a trial lawyer as well, and he's a political commentator, a media legal analyst. I asked him the question this morning, explained the situation that unfolded in Ontario, the outrage people have with the homeowner being charged, and asked him, would this happen in the States? Does this happen in the States?
We've had robbers pull knives on cashiers and then get shot, and they charge the cashier. In Texas, we have an incredibly robust right to self-defense in a castle doctrine. It's not ever going to happen here, right? You know, in fact, we have a different rule in Texas for the amount of force you can use once the sun sets on your own property, which is deadly force. And there are those that would argue that's too much, but you're seeing it in the more liberal areas of this country where people are being charged with, and you've seen, like, in Colorado, you had an incident where a guy chased some car burglars or car thieves in his own car after he stopped them and shot at them and killed. And one just got sentenced to like 50 years, a homeowner who was in the Space Force, you know, Trump's newest division of the military, for murder because he shot a 12-year-old and a 13-year-old were breaking and trying to steal his car, and he came out and it led to a gun. But in, like, in Texas, you're probably not going to get charged with that. I mean, it's a sad outcome, and you think, oh, well, you know, it's horrible for someone to die over trying to steal a car. But it's, you know, I read an incredible story yesterday out of Mexico where a woman was sentenced to prison for strangling a man while he was raping her. And the judge's math was that she could have just hit him over the head, that the strangulation was going too far. It was excessive self-defense. And all of that, as a Texan, is just crazy to me. You come into my house, I get to kill you, period. That's the legal math in Texas. If you break into my home at any time, I get to pick up a gun, and you're still in my home when we have this interaction. I get to pick up a gun and shoot you. And to the point, and I will tell you a personal story. Long before I was born, my grandmother, Virginia Fauthier, long rest of her soul, they had a peeping Tom in their neighborhood who liked to look into windows and watch women undress. And my grandmother caught this known peeping Tom peeping through the window while I think my mother and her sister, both, you know, young teens, were in the bathroom. And she shot him in her yard, didn't kill him. And the police from the small town of Dublin, Texas, told her, Miss Fauthier, next time you shoot him, drag him in the house, right? Which, you know, it's probably going too far, right? But, hey, don't break in a house.
Right.
Don't be a pervert looking into people's windows. But the suggestion that someone should be charged with serious crimes for beating up a guy that committed a home invasion, that's insane to me. The concept that you must retreat is insane to me. The lesson should instead be, hey, y'all, stop robbing homes. Hey, y'all, stop stealing from people. Hey, y'all, stop being criminals. Because it's gone to the point where both American and Canadian, if you look at the big cities in Canada, that the roadblocking to the reporting, the futility of the reporting is intentionality to have crime statistics drop. So then people could say, oh, there's no need for this takeover in D.C. because crime is down. It's down. And it's not down. It's simply that it's either not being reported, or if it is reported, it's not being. We had a huge scandal in Houston where they were just refusing to investigate very serious crimes for years, and calling it a manpower issue and lying and not keeping it out of the stats. It was a national scandal. We have time and time again where people call the police and they feel like, well, what was the point of that? So then you see vandalism, burglary, theft, exactly. all these calls drop.
Yeah.
Because why report it?
That was part of the conversation we had this morning with Charles Big Angry Adams. And if you wonder why they call him Big Angry, just listen to some of his commentary. He likes to get angry about things and give his opinions. You can find him on X at Big Angry Law or his website, bigangry.com. But appreciate him stopping by. And that sparked a whole bunch of conversation around whether or not the pendulum has swung too far. Some people will suggest the pendulum was never in the right place in terms of protecting homeowners, protecting people who want to keep their family safe. There's much too much leniency and consideration given to the accused, those committing the crimes, as opposed to others. So for everyone that joined in on the conversation on the text line, we appreciate that very much. Well, sadly, we weren't able to connect with our guest who was supposed to join us this half hour. I mentioned if you follow The Amazing Race Canada and haven't watched this week's episode, it would have been a spoiler alert as to who got kicked off. Rebecca Morasty, who is from Flying Dust First Nation here in Saskatchewan, one of the contestants this year on Amazing Race Canada, partnered with her friend, who's also named Rebecca. I do hope we can connect with her in the next short while and get her on the program. A great young, energetic leader, a great role model for people across Canada, not just Indigenous people, but really filled her role with responsibility and strength, even though they did not make it past this past week on Amazing Race Canada. So we'll work to reschedule that and bring it to you. We will be talking to one of the heads at the Canadian Light Source, the Synchrotron, when we come back about a big conference happening in Saskatoon this week. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.